The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.
I've probably told this story in bits before, but probably never from beginning to end. And it was sort of sparked by, I went over the back and had a walk across Lion Farm onto the playing fields we used to play on a Saturday. And it was a lovely afternoon, so I sat on the bunk and just got thinking about, I suppose, my career when I was a footballer for about 5 years. And thought, well, maybe people would like to know the old story, really, and how different it were then to now, in terms of what it was like to be an apprentice and stuff like that. So we'll go back to the beginning. I mean, I'd always played football when I was a kid, always played football. And I was all right, you know, I was not bad. And when I got to Causeway Green, our kid was in the top form, and so he'd be like 10 and I'd be, what would it be, 7. And they used to go up dinner times and practice the first team, like the skill team. And Gary Downer, who was the cock of the school, said to Mr. Good and Mr. Homer, let Billy come up. And he says, well, he's only like a young lad. And he says, yeah, but he can kick the ball harder than anybody else and he'll yed anything. So I went up and had a practice. After about two dinner times having a practice, they decided that I could be in the school football team, but I don't have any boots because I used to have to borrow our kids if I went playing. And there was them old boots, you know, where you had them corkscrews. And by the time he'd played, all the like nails was coming through in the bottom and I had to put cardboard in and stuff like that. But any road up, we had to dash out and get some chep pair of boots so I could play. And I played fullback then. And they call me Mallet Yed because I'd yed anything. It don't matter what it was. And remember them old case balls? And if they was wet and you yedded it and the lace was facing it, you'd have an imprint on your forehead, wouldn't you? For about a week. But it progressed anyway. And as I got up through the years, by the time we got to the top form, I was like an inside forward then, and scoring hundreds of goals. And the year before we went to the senior school, we won everything. Every game we played against other schools, all the cups and everything. And we scored about, I mean, I'm probably exaggerating, but we scored about, I don't know, 200 goals. We had about three again, I scored about 120. Goals in a season, played for the Borough side, and that's when it first started, I suppose, really, because little's been known to me, there were like scouts from Wolverhampton Wanderers been watching me, because I'd play on a Saturday afternoon sometimes and all, and so they asked me dad if I could go like in the school holidays and just train at Molyneux and down Castlecroft, and I played in a couple of trials at Castlecroft. And they sort of said, yeah, that's fine. So I'd just gone up to senior school, so I'd be about 11. And I was lucky, really, because our kid was at grammar school and my cousins were at grammar school. And what they used to do is, they used to have the trials for the football teams in the summer holidays. So I'd go up with our kids. And Taffy Davis, who was a games master, he'd watch the trials. And really, the captain of the first 11 used to puck the sides. So I'd be 11 and I got pucked for the under 15s for when I started grammar school. And by the time I was 11, 12, 13 maybe, 13, I was playing in the under 18 side, the first 11. And it was funny really because the grammar school used to play on a Wednesday afternoon and a Saturday morning. And Wednesday afternoon was double maths And Ishwin Davis was the teacher in double maths. Well, because I was playing in the first 11 and you used to go and play all the grammar schools, you don't really play, unless it was a cup competition, you don't really play anybody from round here. So I'd get excused, double maths, and he used to go absolutely mad. Because I'd tick in this letter and I'd say, Mr Davis, because he was Mr Davis and all, the games master says, can I be excused? Double maths, because we're going to Bromsgrove High School to play him at football. And she said, you'll never pass your exam. I did, like, scrape through. But that were great. And I'd spent probably 4 years at the Wolves. And I'd go virtually every holiday, played in their Cubs side, swept the stands, trained with Peter Knowles and people like that, climbed Derek Dugan's his boots, and I just absolutely loved it. And it was that it seemed as though that would be it, you know, because I was doing well there. And it come up to me being 15. I mean, in the meantime, I'd played for Lion Farm Colts, Uplands in the Festival League, the Brummagem League. Started to play for Albright and Wilsons when I was 14 in the Brummagem Wakes League Premier. Excuse me. Then got signed for Albury United in the Midland Combination when I was 14. And I think that really helped me, because that was, both of them was really high standards. And I was a big chap, you know, I used to train like mad. I was really thick set, weight trained and everything. But little did I know, because there's always folks watching you that you don't know. There were scouts from Swindon Town watching me for about 2 years. And I come home one Saturday and there were two blokes there. There was John Trollope's dad, who was the left back. I called Sam Trollope, that was his name. And this other fella who I think was the secretary down at Swindon Town. And I'd just come back from playing for Albury United, and my father were there. And he says, these lads want to speak to you. Anyway, we had this long conversation and it was to sign for Swindon Town. And I said to my dad, well, what shall I do? Because I was expecting to sign for the Wolves. I thought they was going to offer me an apprenticeship and stuff like that after I'd finished my exams. And he says, well, I don't know, son. Anyway, they said, well, think about it and let me know. We'll leave all the forms, blah, 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 blah. Well, anyway, I signed for Swindon Town day. And did me exams, my grammar school exams, left and went down to Swindon Town, down in Wiltshire. And weird, from the first moment I got there, I thought, this is weird, it's a different world. They don't speak properly, they don't speak like we. They walk it off the pace to everybody else. They all seem like numpties. But I love the football, don't get me wrong. Absolutely adored the football, loved training. I was in the digs with a lad from Leicester, an Irish lad and a Scottish lad. And then it started to hit home. I mean, you hear about all how these kids are treated now. We were on something like, I bet it wore £5 a week, which was good wages. But you had to pay your digs there. And if I come home, I'll give my mum something and all. In fact, I come home, I'll talk about that in a minute. I come home loads of times. And these digs, we were four of us in a bedroom, four lads in a bedroom, and we were in bunk beds. So just imagine in a normal bedroom, well, smaller than a normal bedroom, four lads. And how long was I there in the digs? 4 years? If I had my sheets changed twice in 4 years, because the lady that looked after the digs was the mum of the then manager, Danny Williams, Lily her name was, and it was nutty as a fruitcake. It was took me 18 months to realise that I hadn't got a budgie. He used to walk around whistling, Bluey, Bluey, Bluey. Well, we all thought they had this best room, and we all thought the budgie was in the best room, and one day they went out, air and bait, to go shopping, her old mum, and we got into the front room, and there wore a budgie, and we said, oh, there's no budgie. There was the worst cook in the world. This is considering you're my sports person and you're supposed to have good food. There was the worst cook in the world. There absolutely reeked of grease fat all the time, because all they ate was chips, air and bait. I kept them separate, like. And we used to scrape all the food into little brown packets that they put your wages in, because they kept them in the drawer in the main room. And we used to go upstairs and chuck them over the, because we were next to the county ground, chuck them over the wall of the county ground. And they mounted up over the years. There was hundreds of these bags. And Daryl Claypole, who come from Leicester, who was in digs with me, for supper, we'd either get a fairy cake, a quarter of a tiny pork pie and a stale sandwich. And he put his thumb in the icing of this fairy cake this one day, and it returned and returned and returned till it was rock hard. I mean, it was a waste of time. So one of the reasons was, I come home, most weekends, was that I just couldn't stand the cooking. I found the folk really weird. Now, this is nothing against Swindon folk, but I just found them really weird. But I needed me black country fix, me family, me cousins, me aunties and uncles, me mates, going to watch a football game at Barnford Park. So wherever I was, I was first in the third team. So you'd be Abingdon, Didcot, places like that. I'd fun out where the nearest coach or train station was, and then I'd come all the road home and get back late Saturday night. And I'd summit to eat, speak to my brothers. My mother would be baking apple pies and stuff to take back, and I'd put them in my case and give them to all the lads when I got back. And then I'd go and watch my brother play football on a Sunday morning. In fact, the ones, they were short. It was the moon. The full moon was the team. And I said, oh, go on, I'll play. Well, anyway, I argued with the ref day and I got sent off. So I had to give our kid's name, because otherwise, if Swindon had fun out there, I'd played, I'd have been up the Swanee. So he got fined £10 and banned for 4 games for something that hard. He'd never ever told me dad. So if me dad's up there listening, he'll learn the secret. but I love playing all over the place, just absolutely love playing. And we had Stan Harland in our digs, who was the captain of the first team. And Stan was a Liverpudlian, and he used to go home a lot of the times. And he'd drop me off, he'd bring me up the motorway, and he'd drop me off at Junction 2. And I could see the, as you come down, where is it, Frankly, I could see the tower at Raleigh Bonk, and I'd say to him, I'm home now, Frank, Stan. And he'd say, why? And I'd say, this is the tower at Raleigh Bonk. And I did have this sense of belonging to the black country that strengthened through the years. And it really did. But we do all stuff, you know, we do stuff they don't do now. You'd sweep the stands after night games and you'd be there at 1 o'clock in the morning. You'd have to clean all the boots of the after the training of the first teamers. And they were nice. The first teamers were nice. You know, they didn't have a bob on them or anything. But I slowly, and it was when I turned professional, really, that it probably got worse. I slowly started to realise that it wore the Roy of the Rovers dream that I thought it were, because you'd go out on a Friday night. We had passes to the pitches, so that's all we did, really. And I never went out with wenches while I was playing football. And you'd go out on a Friday night and you'd see the first teamers bladdered in some pub somewhere smoking fakes. And when I come home, I'd say to me dad, Dad, they all smoke fakes and they drink, you know, to high heaven. And after the game or even at half time or after training, you know, they got a bottle of beer and they smoke fakes. And he says, well, son, that's real life, ain't it? You're just going to have to, you know, learn to live with it. And he rode up. It was all going all right. It was bad. I signed professional forms, was offered a 2-year contract, so I'd be 16 then, 16, something like that. I was in the reserves, I was doing all right. I was still coming home nearly every week. I'd come home, I just couldn't hack it to stop the weekends with them. And Daryl was he'd be out, he'd had about 46 girlfriends and stuff like that. Oh, old Tom, I'll tell you about old Tom. We had old Tom who lived in Iworth, which is about 6 miles away, and he was a groundsman for the training ground. And it don't matter. He used to walk to work 6 miles. He was about 300. And it don't matter if it was sunny or minus 26. He'd always just have a cap, a scarf, Harris tweed jacket, his jumper, check shirt, brogues and corduroys. And he'd got all this machinery that he could use. And you'd say to him, "What, Tom, we're doing corners today." And he'd say, "That's all right. I'm just going to do the 18-yard bark." And you go, "All right, then we'll be out in a minute. You know, we'll be up that end, so just make sure it's all right." And you'd go out, and he'd got all this machinery that he could cut the grass with. And he'd got a bloody sickle, and he'd have a sickle, and he'd be like, "K-chick, k-chick." And you'd go over and go, "Tom, trainer wants to do corners today up this end." And he'd go, "Oh, he won't be a minute." And then he'd stop at about 9 o'clock and have his hummocks of bread out of this greaseproof paper and a cup of tea, and he'd be like 3 hours, and he'd go, "Tom, we're doing corners today. I'll be back in a minute." And in the end, you'd just gee up and do throw-ins or something to play five-a-side. And he'd always pack up about 2 o'clock to go home. Don't matter if there was work to be done or not, he'd just go home and walk. He was a fantastic old bloke. He was probably one of the other honey blokes that I sort of got on. And he rowed up. Started, played professional, turned professional, got me contract. It was something like £7.50 in the third team, 50 pence a draw, pound a win, £10 in the reserves, pound a draw, £2 a win, and then 15 quid if you got in the first team, and then to be like, £2.50 a draw, £5 a win, but then you'd get crowd bonuses. And in the reserves, it was something like £1 for every 50 over 200 folk, and you used to get about 36 to a reserve game. And if you got in the first team, it was something like £5 for every 1,000 over 20,000, and then you used to get 18,000. You know, you'd never get any bonuses. But that was your contract, like the big noises, you'd get better contracts than that. and I got in the reserves, and that's when it all started to turn sour, really. Because you'd get in the reserves and you'd play well, and half either would come down on the couch or the bus and everywhere. My dad followed me everywhere. My dad would be... I do a story called One Step on the Line about my dad. And it don't matter where we were playing, you'd look across and he'd be there one step from the line. And how he got there, I don't know. But I'd come out at Highbury. It'd be then, wouldn't it? Or Chelsea's ground, Stamford Bridge. Ipswich. All over the shop. And I'd look and he'd be there in the stands. He'd watch the game and then he'd be gone like 25 minutes before the end because he'd got to go and get his coach to get all the road home. And I'd get a lift off Stan and see him later on. All he'd say was, on a Sunday when we had a chat, "You've done well there, son. You're doing well. I'm doing really well." And then you'd get somebody, and I remember his name, and I bothered if I tell you. His name was Mick Blick, and... he got a right bob on him and he thought he was the bee's knees. Very rarely played in the first team, but he was in the second team and he come up on the training ground and he'd been injured for about 5 weeks. And he said, "You're playing at Trowbridge in the thirds on Saturday." And I went, "No way, eh?" I said, "I'm playing at so-and-so. We're at Oxford United." And he says, "No, you're way. You're playing at Trowbridge." And I went, "I don't know now." He says, "Because I've been and seen the reserve team manager. I'm fit now, so I'm back in to play. And you're in my place." And I went, "Nah, that ain't going to work." And because I then realised that because of me upbringing and what I'd been taught, you know, you stand up for your sin and you work by certain codes and practices. I thought, "I ain't having this." And so I'd go in and I'd say to the reserve team manager, "Am I in the team Saturday? Because I've played 4 games and I've had good, you know, reports for 4 games. And Mick Blick's come and told me the reason." And he went, "Oh, that's right." And I said, "Well, why? Explain to me why. If there's a good reason, then I'll take it. But there ain't a good reason." And he, you know, and then he'd say, "Don't argue with me and you do what you're told or you're going to see the manager." Well, by then, Danny Williams, who was a northerner, had left, and there was a Londoner called Fred Ford, who who's the manager, and he was a bully, an absolute bully. Well, I'd be like summoned to his office and he'd say, you've been shouting your mouth off to so-and-so, are you the reserve teammate? I says, no, I ain't been shouting my mouth off. I've been asking for an explanation as why I've played four games and got good reports that I'm in the third team. And he said, we make my decisions, not you. I said, well, that ain't an answer. Just explain to me. And then he was one of them who started effing and blinding and lost his, you know, lost his rag and stuff like that. And I'd say, don't shout at me. I ain't frightened of you. I said, look, where I come from, if something happens, you get an explanation. And if the explanation's right, I'll accept it. But you ain't giving me nothing. I'm just saying, I've decided. And to me, that ain't good enough. So we did really get off on the right foot. And then, I was a pro then, and I'd see these young kids, you know, first time away from home, from Ireland, Scotland, you know, the north of England. And he'd be there, watching them, and he'd be effing and blinding them, and I'd say, excuse me, Mr. Ford. He'd say, what? I said, these kids are mum sick. You know, they're away from home. They ain't got the mums and dads. This is a real experience. I've been there. And, you know, they don't want you shouting, oh, you don't bloody talk to me. And he'd go off on one again. And I go, well, I don't think it's right. And so me and him just dagger on. And these instances happened consistently, you know. I'd get back in the reserves, I'd play against West Ham, have a great game. Next time I'd be in the third team, I'd go in. He'd do the same thing and I'd go, every time I come in here, all you do is say, I'll make the decisions. And to me, that don't rub with me. You know, you ain't giving me no explanation. I said, after the game, reserve team manager come up to me and said, you've played a blinder? And then I find myself in the third team. I said, look, if I don't get a proper run, how am I supposed to get in the first team? And this went on for about 18 months. And then I was coming up for a renewal, a contract. And we had a discussion. We sat down and we had a discussion, me and him. And I can't remember what the figures were, but the figures were agreed. Third team wages, bonuses. Reserve team wages, bonuses. First team wages, bonuses. And, you know, I ain't lying. And I shook hands with him and I said, that's great if you get the paperwork ready. You know, although I wore enjoying as such, it was still my dream and it was still my father's dream. And I thought, I'm going to nail this and I'm going to get in that bloody first team. I tell you, I'm going to work my rag off until I get in that first team. Whatever goes on, don't matter how many arguments we have, I'm going to get in that first team. And we shook on it. And there was folks in there, reserve team manager. There was a secretary. Everybody was there. And the secretary said, I'll draw the contract up and we'll sort that out. And there was about 5 months left on the present contract. Anyway, you know, I was playing and weeks went on and we trained and stuff like that. And he was calling me to the office. Secretary was there and this other bloke was there. And he said, here's your contract then. And he put it down. And I looked at it and the figures was different. There was less than we shook hands on. And I went to co-signing. And he went, what do you mean? You co-sign it? And I could see him, you know, his face. He used to go blood red as though he was going to bust a blood vessel or something. And I said, of course, sign it. And he says, why call you sign it? I said, because them figures are different to what we shook on. And I said, and you was here, pointing at the secretary, and you was here when we shook on it. And he said, irrelevant, that's your contract. And I went, well, I signed it. He says, son, you'll sign it or I'll ruin your career. I said, you won't do nothing because I ain't signing it. He said, I'm going to put you out to Bournemouth on loan. I said, no, you're right, because I won't go. And he said, if you don't go to Bournemouth, then you're finished. And I said, I mean, when I think about it, it's one of them times, eh, when you, when time stands still and like a few seconds just seem like hours and hours. And we like had this high noon face off, me and him. And I just looked at him, like I Jedi'd him, and I thought, I ain't going to be doing this. And I said, I ain't going to Bournemouth. I ain't going anywhere else that you try to send me. You shook my hand. Where I come from, there's codes and practices and values. And if your chick ends on the deal, your dog go back on the deal. And you're finagging by I changing all the figures. And you got two blokes in here who I opening the gobs who was here when we shook hands. And they don't say a word. I said, so you two should be ashamed of yourself. And I was digging myself a deeper, deeper hole. And he rode up and says, hey, I signed it. And he said, right then. And I said, he says, what are you going to do? Oh, he said, the secretary says, go away, have a think about it and come back the end of the week. I think it was the Wednesday. I says, all right, I'll come back, but I won't change my mind. Anyway, they call me in the office again on the Friday. I went on the Friday. I said, right, here's what's got to happen. 5 months left of my contract. Pay up my contract. I said, and it's up to you. I'll stop and play. It was the close season, see, so the war now going on, but you had to be there. I said, I'll stop and I'll play and I'll train for them 5 months, or you can pay me and I'll go. Anyway, they sent me out the room, did they? And I sat outside for a bit. And I hadn't. Every time I come home, I was absolutely bricking it because I thought, I've got to tell my dad. Because it was his dream and all, but I just couldn't do it. I told our kid, our Gazza, but I told him to, you know, he was sworn to secrecy. So he knew because I had to tell somebody. Anyway, I'm called back in. And he says, we're going to pay up your contract and that's it. I ain't doing anything else. Yeah, I'm finished here and you can go and see, I don't know his name, he's Jimmy or something, the secretary. You'll have the rest of your money Friday and you're finished Friday. And I put my hand out to shake his hand and he wouldn't shake it. And I says, why have you shake my hand? And he says, I don't want to shake your hand. And I said, well, that's another point of your character tonight. I said, because whatever's gone on, you know, I appreciate what you've done for me. It's just one of them things. I said, but, you know, you're finagged and we all come from folks don't finag on anything. And if they don't, then they lose face. It's as simple as that. So I went the Friday. I went to the office. I pucked up my money in a brown packet. Got the contract. I had got the contract they wanted me to sign, and I think I've got it at home somewhere as like a memento. Went round, said ta-ra to all of the lads, and they're all, oh no, you'll get on and all that. And even then, in the space, I don't know where they knew, but even then, in the space on 2 weeks, I had places like Warsaw. Phoned me to say, you know, we've heard this, do you want to come up here? Nuneaton Borough was another one, they come on. But I'd sort of decided that I wasn't going to play football anymore. Something that I'd wanted to do from when I was a bab, you know, till I started doing it. And it was like the be-all and end-all of everything. And I just decided I wasn't going to kick a ball again. And that was it. And so, anyway, I pucked everything up. Send me to Raz, and all the road on the couch home, I was thinking, well, I'm going to tell my dad. What am I going to tell my dad? He's going to go absolutely mental. He's going to pile me sick. And I got home about 10:30, I think, because you had to go into Brummagem and then get the bus out. And he'd been on the 2 till 10 shift. I know he had, because he'd got his vest on and his braces round his hips, and he'd had a swill, and I could see his supper. He'd had his supper and the gravy was all dry around the end of the enamel plate. And the mother had gone to bed. My brothers had gone to bed, but our Gaz come down because he knowed. And he sat there. And I put my case down. I had this like old all sort of case. And he said, all right, son. And I said, ah. Oh. I says, I got something to tell thee. And he said, what? I said, I've finished playing. And he said, finished playing? How do you mean? And I said, I ain't going back. I said, I've finished playing. I've got me contract money that they owe me. And I ain't playing football anymore, Dad. And he said, sit down here. And we sat down and I thought, here it comes now. He's going to absolutely hit the roof. And he said, tell me what happened. So, of course, I told him really how unhappy I'd been for 12 months, really. But more so, what happened between me and this Fred Ford at the first meeting, and then what happened at the second meeting, and how these two blokes never opened the gobs to say that, you know, he did shake hands and it should have been that and he shouldn't have changed. And he said, so, son, and I mean, my dad, you know, in terms of schooling, he didn't have much schooling, but he was the wisest bloke that I've ever met. And he just, like, sat there and pondered for a bit, and he said, so you stuck up for yourself? And I said, well, yeah, Dad. I said, I don't know what it is. I said, maybe it's coming from here, maybe it's me upbringing or something. I said, but I couldn't have it, really. That bloke finagled on what he promised to do, and something just snapped, and it wore just for me. It was for the kids that he effed and blinded at, and, you know, when he could never give me an explanation as to why I wore playing after I'd played really, really well and stuff like that. So it sort of all come to an head. And in that minute, I thought, you know, I don't want to be like you. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to have people stabbing you in your back and all that. And it might be that everything else that I ever do in my life is never going to be the same, but I just don't want it. And he said, that's fair enough, son. If you stuck up for your sin, what you going to do with the money? And he says, I said, I don't know. I said, there's about 500, 600 quid here. So, you know, I'm all right for a bit. And he says, no, you are all right for a bit. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, tomorrow you go and put it in a bank and then you go and find a job. He says, because you are sitting around the house, I ain't bothered if you got 600 quid in your pocket. He says, you go and find a job. But I'll tell you this, he says, I'm really, really proud on, you know, what you've done and how you've handled yourself. And I know it's your dream, and I know it's my dream, and I know it's the Litland's dream here that's sitting in, listening in. He said, but the most important thing is you've been true to yourself and probably true to all them kids. And if it's like that, you don't want any part in it. And I ain't saying that the world ain't like that, because you'll come across folks like that. But you've learnt something now in the school of life that you'll take a forward with you, and you could beat that, son. And I just sat there and I just thought, and I was, you know, I was immensely proud of me dad at that moment as well. I mean, he was like up there on a pedestal for me all my life. But I thought, look, you ain't judged anybody, and you are, you know, and you ain't lost your rag or anything, and you've sort of got what I got, in a way. You got why I did what I did. And it was because of you, I thought. It's because of you and my granddad and my cousins and my aunties and the black country folk and where I'm from is why I've done it. And I might have sacrificed a great career. I don't know. I'll never know. But I don't regret it. You know, I absolutely loved parts of it. And I absolutely loved the blokes that I played with, and I absolutely loved, you know, meeting some of the folks and the stars. But I did like the business when I found out what it was like. And, you know, and it's got worser and worser. All right, they get millions and millions of pounds, but it ain't changed at all. You know, in fact, it's probably got worser from some reasons. So, yeah, that was my football story, and it's probably the first time that I've told it from beginning to end, leaving out lots of things like, you know, playing foul matches in one weekend, and now they call play foul matches in a month. Smedic Park, when there was like 26 teams and two showers, and you got, you know, you washed yourself in a bucket of cold water, all them things. Albury United training at Newbury Lane. Some fantastic memories, some fantastic players. Paddy Page, the left back in the first team. Playing in for all Bratton Wilsons in the Brummagem League and the under 15 Brummagem team. Going to Bognor Regis in the grammar schools, the English grammar schools competition, and being clapped off the field after I'd played against, I don't know, North of England or something. And just all them memories you got that are really, really precious outweigh all the bad stuff. And all it is, It's just a story at the end of the day, right? It's just a story, another part of your life. You learn from it, you move on from it. And I very often go to schools and tell kids that, you know, if you have a dream, follow that dream. But if it don't work out, it ain't the end of the world, because there's so many more important things like family and friends and your roots are where you come from that make you who you am. And so I use it really in a positive way for kids. But the dream was over and another one started. Right? So that's the story, beginning to end.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country, as they say.